This is Through the Pickets, a podcast proudly brought to you by the New Zealand Cricket Players Association, where we showcase our members' interests, achievements and experiences either side of the white picket fence, with more of a lens on their off-field endeavours. Today's episode features a man who migrated to New Zealand as a teenager from Zimbabwe, worked incredibly hard to become a weapon with his leg spin bowling, and extraordinary in the field, so much so that he stepped up for the Black Caps on a number of occasions. And most recently, Peter Younghusband has found his and others' feet with his new sock business.
It's gone high, and it will be a chance. Coming in a mid-wicket and taken. And just like that, the Firebirds make the breakthrough. Once again, Younghusband doing a job. Jimmy Neesham knows how to play. He too has got some great variation, but Nick Kelly is not going to be showing anything else today. And Peter Younghusband's on a hat-trick.
Well, the reason he's excited is he's got rid of the two in players.
Oh, that's gone straight up. Who wants that? Ben Stairs has got it. Taking it. Two wickets in the over. Peter Younghusband is doing the job and the skipper's on his way. And the Firebirds, wow, what an over that was.
Wellington Firebird leg spinner extraordinaire and grandmaster when it comes to fielding. Welcome to Through the Pickets, Peter Younghusband. Thank you so much for putting some time aside for us. Peter, about a year ago, you started your own business called Piranha. Now, can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yes. It's probably just more than a year ago, actually, now. But it's been a slow burner that's picked up recently. It was a spur-of-the-moment decision, just something that I'd been sitting on for a couple of years, even previous to that. And it took a little bit of convincing and a little bit of thought process, and I pushed go on an idea, and it's sort of blossomed into what it is now.
Okay, so Piranha is grip socks, and obviously it's not my area of expertise. You know a lot more about it. So what made you decide to get into socks and the grip tread? The only other time I've seen it is those trampoline places you take your kids with the little sticky bits under the socks so they don't slide off the tramp.
Yeah, it's exactly that, really. They're effectively trampoline socks on steroids, I like to call it. They're a little bit more high performance. And I guess throughout the years, I mean, being a cricketer, you spend a lot of time on your feet. So shoes was always a little bit of a sought after commodity for me in cricket. I was always after the perfect shoe. And once I found that, I sort of looked for the perfect sock and struggled for a while. I like to be light on my feet, and the big woolen socks didn't really do that for me. And then you could get some high performance socks that were just far too pricey. And basically I could find some knockoffs that I was wearing for a while, and they were great, but they just didn't last long. And I had a bit of a light bulb moment to give it a crack myself and design something for my own. Yeah.
So at that high performance end, finding a good pair of socks that you can do your job well, and it was obviously quite critical. Like, you know, common layman like myself, you don't even think of that.
Yeah, I think it is critical. I mean, like I said before, you spend a lot of time on your feet. So often at the end of the day of a day's cricket, taking off your shoes is one of the best feelings. And if you're not comfortable in those situations, man, it can make the day just that little bit worse. They have to be strong. They have to be lightweight. Like I said, moisture wicking. And these are all words and things I've learned on this journey that I didn't really even know about. But here I am talking a bit of jargon.
How did you get into the technical side, the technology that is in and around it?
It took a couple sort of practice runs. The first moment I remember was actually seeing, like, could I get a label on a sock? Could I get my brand on a sock in a simple design? I got that, and they arrived, and I was like, well, there's a sock and there's my brand on the sock. I was like, that was easy enough. And then I was like, do these actually work? And they weren't great. They weren't great at all. I ended up giving every single one away. And then I was lucky enough to have a few contacts in the shoe and sock industry. And I sort of just sat down and had a few conversations about them, what makes the best sock. And this is where I learned all about the moisture wicking. What is that? What are the strongest materials? What are the most comfortable? Which are the ones you want to avoid? And those were just conversations that I had. And slowly, as with a little bit of Googling as well, I just got a bit of knowledge in that area.
Mate, for people like myself, what's moisture wicking? Is that how much moisture it absorbs?
Basically, yeah, moisture wicking is how much it absorbs. So yeah, cotton's the one that absorbs the most moisture. So yeah, and everything else is that polyester and stuff don't, basically.
So where did the name piranha come from?
So I wanted to make a brand that at the time had the initials of myself and my fiance. Oh. Yes. So
Right.
She was Harriet Anderson at the time. She's now Harriet Young Husband and obviously Pete Young Husband. So we always used to refer to ourselves as Happy, H-A-P-Y. And that was my first idea. I was like, Happy Sock, brilliant. And then quickly realized that it was probably the worst idea ever, because there's a huge billion-dollar company called Happy Socks. And if I was to name myself Happy Socks with one less P, I'd basically disappear into the wilderness of the internet behind them. So, I just tried to come up with a name that included both our initials. And it was on a drive home. I was singing out, I was a Python, this, that, and piranha sort of happened. And I was like, I don't even know how to spell it. Because piranha, it's actually spelt wrong. It has a P-Y in it. So, yeah.
One thing I noticed, you know, checking your Instagram and your website, a lot of bright, vibrant colors. And is there a story behind the vibrancy? Like you mentioned the happy part. Is that a spin-off from that you wanted them to have a bit of personality and a bit of life to them?
Definitely. Yeah. I wasn't the first Gripsock company to start up. There was a lot going on around that. But I found a lot of them were very one-dimensional. They were very football orientated, designed to be hidden underneath your team sock. And I wanted to become a brand that was actually, you know, I want to be seen. I don't want to be a sock that's hidden. And so I was like, the best way to do that is become sort of an athleisure type of sock, a bit of a street style. So I went with colors, bright colors. And I mean, there's no stopping that in cricket. So yeah.
And I do like the marketing and social media, mate, like the version 2 chaos, you know, may look cute, but packs a punch, you know, pastel purple and green might be the colors of a villain, but could make you a hero. So is that you? Is this all or have you got a marketing whiz sitting behind? Because they're really neat, man.
Yeah, no, that was me, actually. I've tried to run with a bit of a theme for each version. You know, my originals versions are all named after cities around the world that had some association to the colors that I was using. And then this version too, like you just said, I went with something different. I actually researched a few Marvel characters and that sort of fit the theme. And in amongst my research, I discovered that a lot of villains in Marvel movies are green and purple.
Obviously at the CPA, life after cricket, it's big for us. Your playing time, as we know, is finite. Did Joe Murray, your personal development manager, give you a bit of a nudge or a bit of support or some opportunities and go, hey, look, Peter, you know, your cricket, one day you've got to hang up the socks. I was going to say hang up your hat, but, you know, in your instance, or boots. Did you get a little bit of help from us?
Yes, definitely. I mean, ever since I've sort of been in the system with cricket, I mean, I've really noticed a big push from the CPA to do something outside of cricket. Fortunately, I already had a degree behind me, so the actual study part of my life was done. But, I mean, I was always on the lookout, always getting Joe, you know, pushing me to do extra courses or look into something. I'm well aware that, like, you know, cricket doesn't last forever. I wish it would. It did, but it doesn't. So yeah, now Joe's been a big part of pushing me.
And did we tee you up with a business mentor as well? So you've actually got someone you can bounce ideas off.
Yes, you did. Yeah. I've only had one meeting so far. And it was amazing. They were in retail as well, so some of the points and things, the ideas they gave me were so valuable, and I've already taken them on board, and even after one meeting it's really blossomed into a few ideas that I have. So yeah, great support network there.
Obviously being a cricketer, you've got some pretty big celebrity endorsements from, I'll just name some of the cricket ones. You've got Mealy and Jess Kerr, Devon Conway, Sophie Eccleston, Finn Allen, just to name a few. So it's pretty good having some high-profile athletes wearing your brand.
Yes, I mean, I am lucky in that the cricket is my warm market, and I have access to these players. The real test is now is, can I get a bunch of athletes in other codes and really start branching out to various countries as well, I suppose. But yeah, it's a nice start, and they've been amazing for me, and everyone who seems to wear my socks does do quite well for themselves. So whether it's a lucky charm, I'm not sure.
A little birdie told me that you coached Mealy in her college years with her leg spin bowling. Now, she's very, very amazing at what she does on a cricket pitch. So you've played a massive role in there, haven't you?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I mean, it's actually hasn't really stopped with the way Mealy and myself go. We still bowl when we can together. I think she was 14 when I first started coaching her a little bit. I was sort of just breaking through into fibres at that point. And she loved the way we both, you know, bounced ideas off each other. I was learning as well. And we just talked a lot of tactics, and we basically learned leg spin together at the top level. And well, I mean, we've got such a great friendship now, and that even extends to her family. But yes, it was 2 years later, she debuted for the White Ferns, and it was just amazing to see such a talent. I mean, it wasn't that surprising, but such a talent she is, and such a cool girl to work with.
Shane Warne, an inspiration for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think every leg spinner, isn't he? He was the reason I started. I remember the day I started bowling leg spin. All it was try copy Warney, try copy what he did, try copy the googly. So massive part of why I became a leg spinner.
What made him so good?
I think he just spun it so much more than anyone at the time, but with an accuracy that no one had ever seen. Because leg spin is traditionally, I mean, still is the hardest art to do, they say. It's very hard to be accurate. And he just was so accurate. And when you're just consistently spinning it that much and landing it in the correct spot, I mean, you're gonna automatically be right at the top end of any bowler in the world.
I don't know if you recall it. I think when they started putting microphones on players in the Big Bash, and he basically told you what he was going to do to the batter, then did it and got them out, you're just sitting there going, oh my God, this man is just incredible.
Yeah. It was actually McCullum he was bowling to that point. I remember watching that live as well. That's funny, because I think about that moment a lot, and I almost try emulate that. You stand at the top of your mark, and it's the way you look at a batsman, you try to think, what are they trying to do? What am I going to do? This is how I'm going to get them out. And it comes back to that exact Big Bash game where, you know, you try to be ahead of them, and you actually talk yourself into exactly what's going to happen.
Hey, I know it's early days, but how is Piranha going? And where would you like to see it go if you could crystal ball it and go, hey, this is what I'd really love to do with this company for myself and the family?
In all honesty, mate, in the last 6 weeks, it's quite literally taken off. It's been a big winter of adding a few little dimensions to the company. I've added some custom options, you know, make your own type design options for people to do. I've got some exciting new little partnerships in the coming months that are going to be announced. And it's been a lot of work. It's all unpaid at the moment. So, but I'd love it to be something I could do full time. I'd love it to be something I could do on the road. I could, you know, have a business basically with a laptop and just work for myself. I think the idea that, you know, I can be with my family as much as possible and actually run a business is so exciting. It's something I never thought would happen, but the way things have happened the last few months, it's become a possibility.
Okay, little plug, where do any listeners go to find you and, of course, see for themselves what we're talking about, or even if they want to go as far as making a purchase? Are you purely online? Are you in some shops, or how does it work, Peter?
Mostly online, so just piranha.co.nz. That's Piranha with a Y, so P-Y. I am stocked in Kilburnie Sports as well. They've been great supporters of my business. And hopefully in time to come, I'll be dotted around a few shops in Wellington. And like I said, there's an exciting announcement in a couple months that will come out.
Can you give us a hint? Maybe? Small one?
No. No, I can't. It is in the football sector, actually. So there you go.
Okay. Also, you and your lovely wife, Harriet, have had a baby boy, Luca, who has just turned one. So I'm guessing that parenthood has dramatically changed your life.
Yes, it certainly has. It certainly has. It's the biggest life change. We did the classic get a dog beforehand, but nothing changes your life like a baby. It's been amazing. It's been a journey, but yeah, a lot of fun.
Biggest thing you wish someone had told you about having children before you had them?
How hard it is. it's really hard. It's very rewarding when you start hitting milestones, but it's a lot of work. I got huge ups for mums and single parents, seeing the way my wife, what she's gone through and all that, man. I look around, I'm like, yeah, full kudos to mums. It's a tough job.
I know this podcast goes out audio only, but we're chatting over Zoom as we speak. And your eyes don't look too bad, mate. I thought they'd be hanging out.
No, we're quite lucky. We've got our little boy sleeps very well and has done for a few months now. So, yeah, that's a killer. The sleep is a killer. And yeah, once you overcome that, it just seems to the enjoyment factor just snowballs.
Have you found yourself, which you wouldn't have done prior, looking for the specials on boxes and nappies or reading endless forums on, you know, what works for teething or sleeping right through or, you know, all the aisles you never looked at. And then you start going, oh, Bonjela cream. Oh, yeah, I know that does this, 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 this. And you never would have thought about it a year ago.
Yeah, massively. I mean, my wife, Harriet, she's big into that. Funny enough that our algorithms on little things like TikToks are now just all baby stuff. And and you find yourself watching TikTok videos on how to get your kid to learn to walk or how to make them sleep better. And so, yeah, no, certainly your life gets consumed by it.
You mentioned Harriet. She's involved in sports as well, in the sports world, with the All Blacks brand. Are you allowed to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, so she's been with the All Blacks brand for a number of years now, 6 or 7 years. She's in the licensing program. So this family that we've got now and is just all sport. Her younger brother actually represented Canterbury cricket, first class and List A cricket. So it's right in the blood there. And she was a great sportswoman growing up. Sportswoman, sorry. She was a good touch player. She was great at netball. She coached a lot of netball. So yeah, I mean, It's right up her alley, and there's cool perks involved with that job as well. I'll take them when they come, and she's doing very well.
Peter, you came out to New Zealand from Zimbabwe as a child. So what's the story behind that and adjusting to a new country and a new way of life, which would have been so dramatically different?
Yeah, it was hugely different. I was probably the lucky one in the family in that I was the baby, so I was only 12. So me getting into school and making new friends sort of came a bit easier. My brothers were in their late teens, so that was quite tough. And then especially for mum and dad, I mean, they had a life in Zimbabwe which was incredible. Mum and dad were incredible business people. Dad ran a hugely successful farm alongside a number of other businesses, and to sort of have that taken away so fast and then effectively start again, like they had some things on the side that really helped us land on our feet a bit more in New Zealand, but was nowhere near what we left behind. So yeah, incredibly difficult for them.
Was that with all the political unrest that went on and come to New Zealand, start from scratch?
Yes. Yeah, it was. It was. Wow. That was all of it. We came in August on a holiday, which was what we were told as kids in 2002. And what we didn't know was that was actually kickstarting our residency. Because we got that through my mum, who had a university degree, and I think we landed in New Zealand 2 weeks before that expired, with no intention of ever living here. And we went home, and it was August, and it had been raining, and it was cold, and we were like, we're never going back to that country again. And by December that year, mate, we were living here. That's how quickly.
And you got a bit of summer in too.
Yeah, we got a bit of summer. Yeah, no, we haven't looked back since, really. We absolutely love New Zealand. We living in a first world country where things work. My brothers have done so well. My brother owns his own engineering. My middle brother owns his own engineering firm. He got a solid degree behind him, and he's done what he's done, and I've got degrees behind him. And they just, you're just so fortunate. You're in a country where that means a lot more. And you have everything, all the infrastructures in place to be just such a beautiful country.
Was Nelson where you started?
We originally were going to look in Christchurch. That's where my family was, my dad's sister, so my cousins. And then we went for a drive up to Nelson to see some old Zimbabwe friends that had moved 2 years previous. And there we do one drive along Rocks Road in Nelson along the ocean there. And dad is an absolute avid fisherman. So he drove down there and he's like, this is it. This is where I'm living. There were boats out in the harbour all fishing, and he's like, this is where I'm living. And I think 2 weeks later we were there. Yeah.
Just like that.
Just he's one to make a quick decision and just go for it. Yeah.
Okay. So what was Nelson like?
It was awesome. Once we settled in, we sort of learned to love everything that came with it. You know, Nelson's got a lot of outdoor stuff. We were farm kids growing up, so we were always outdoors. So there was the mountain biking, there was the skiing, there was the water, the fishing and the water sports. And that really just kept us busy and kept our minds occupied. There was a lot to do. And I think that was a huge part of settling in well into New Zealand.
Any fishing stories with Dad? Was he one of these guys that wakes you all up at 4 o'clock and go, come on, boys?
It was my brother that really became the fishing. I was always playing cricket on a Saturday. My brother was the hunter-gatherer of the family. So it was, you know, my brother and my dad, they buggered off and went fishing, and I was always left behind playing cricket. But I remember we had a container arrive from Zimbabwe that we managed to get out, and it came with a bunch of furniture and a boat was obviously in there. So this fiberglass, wow. But yeah. And it landed, and I think Dad went out the day after that landed on the street. And they went out, and there was a big fishing competition going on in Nelson at the time, and they'd never really been out. They dropped a line, and they ended up catching a massive snapper. And at the time, Dad, we're so new, and we didn't want to spend a lot of money, and he was like, no, I'm not paying the entry fee into this competition. We're just going to go fish. And he pulled the snapper, which would have been comfortably the best fish of the day, won probably a huge prize pack. And we ended up missing out on all that.
Oh, no way. Hey, mind you, you got to water test the boat, though.
It was a cool day that day. We also, coming from what we had, a big ride on lawnmower came out of the container as well to mow basically our little curbside strip of grass.
Hey, now, how did you get into cricket? Was that something you had started in Zimbabwe, or you just went to primary school in New Zealand and some of your mates were playing, or some of the kids you met, or what's the story behind your cricket pathway?
No, we were right into cricket growing up. Obviously, Zimbabwe was a good cricket country at the time when I was growing up. We had the Flower Brothers and Henry Alonga and Heath Streak and all those guys. So they were my heroes growing up. Sport in Zimbabwe was also compulsory. So growing up, I had to play everything. So there was the hockey, the rugby, the cricket, cross country, swimming, all that was compulsory. So fortunately, it was the love of my life, really, sports. So playing all these different sports really made me sort of multi-talented and I think helped in the long run. Rugby was always actually my number one, but I never grew. And I came to New Zealand and pursued all the sports. Still, rugby was my number one. But when you don't grow, you end up playing some of the boys, even at like 15, 16, you quickly realize that it's not for you.
So you went from Nelson to Christchurch to Wellington. Is that correct?
Nelson, Christchurch for university. Quick stint overseas to play some cricket, and then Wellington for work primarily. I hadn't really cracked cricket, I suppose, post my under 19s level, and I still had aspirations, but I moved to Wellington for work and I was like, I need to give this one more shot. So yeah, I was like, how am I going to do that? And I think I sent a few emails to the Firebirds coaches and I said, look, I'm available to netball. I just wanted to get in front of their eyes as much as possible. And that required me working a lot of part-time jobs just so I could make these trainings. And once you're in their eyes, you know, you're hoping your results go your way. You're actually front of mind as well.
And there's a nice story with you and Bruce Edgar when you first became contracted.
I had an inkling I might have got a contract. I had a few really good years. I had already debuted for Wellington off contract and I was all excited and I was like, I must be the next one, you know. And it was the year Hamish Marshall moved back from England and he was quite a late inclusion into the squad that he was coming back and he was going to settle in Wellington and play. And he actually got offered the last contract, or he got offered at the last spot, and I was devastated. I was gutted. I thought that was going to be my spot, and it was probably a point in my life where I was 26 years old where I almost was going to give up. I was like, I think I'm done. I've put a lot of years into this. I think I'm done. And it just so happened that his English contract overlapped with his New Zealand contract starting, and he couldn't, obviously you can't be a local in two countries. So he became ineligible and it opened up the spot again quite late into the piece. And Bruce gave me a phone call and he said, come meet me at this cafe in 15 minutes. And I was all a little bit excited. I'd sort of heard, I'd heard a little bit through the grapevines. I was like, Marsh, you might not be getting this. And then the rest is history, really. Bruce was like, the spot's opened up again and you're it. Yeah, and that was my first contract.
Was that the point that you thought, okay, cricket's my pathway, or did you think way before that, okay, this is something that I'm quite good at and I'd like to give this a career go?
The first time I think cricket became a real option, it was actually under 19 level. I played quite well through the CD under 19 age groups because I was a Central Districts boy growing up. And I made the New Zealand under 19 training squads 2 years in a row. I never ended up playing for them, but it was the first time where I was sort of rubbing shoulders with the likes of Kane and Tim Southee and Trent Bolt. They were all my age group. And that was the first time I was like, maybe I could do this, you know. I mean, I think Kane and Tim were the only ones playing first class cricket at the time. They were only 18 years old already playing. And then and that was when I was like, all right, I'll give this a good crack. And under 19s went by and I hadn't cracked it yet, but the drive was still there. And I mean, I was 26 when I got my first contract. So I gave it a good go for a number of years. Yeah.
You're arguably one of the best fielders in the country. And I know you're real modest, so you're going to go, oh, nah, shucks, don't say that. But you are. So how did you get so good at it?
I think playing a lot of different sports growing up really helped that. I mean, I like to think I had a lot of natural ability early with all the different sports. You know, I loved my hockey. I was a great mover. I was great at knowing where the ball was going to be, all those sorts of things. That was a huge part of me being just a sports person who loved playing with ball sports, you know. And the fielding side of it was just an extension of that. I loved it. I guess that was the biggest, any youngster growing up, I think you have to love fielding to be a good fielder. You can't just expect to be one if you don't actually enjoy it. So when I look at it now, like, I still love it. I want to be the best. I want to teach people to get better. And I've been fortunate now, especially in the Firebirds, to play alongside some incredible athletes and incredible fielders. And it's so much fun when you even training, you know, like the likes of Logan, and you've seen what he's done with the Firebirds and his fielding. Nathan Smith's incredible. With Tim Robinson coming through is incredible. Mike Brace was, they're just amazing fielders. And now it makes fielding really fun to be with these guys.
I was thinking before you said Logan's name, I was thinking, I wonder how you guys sort of compare that catch, the Van Bank, et cetera. That was pretty spectacular. Is there a little bit of rivalry there now? In a good way.
100%. Yeah, 100% there's rivalry. We don't know who's number one, number two. There's a lot of banter going about who that actually is. You know, sometimes it's just how the cookie crumbles, you know, right place, right time. And that's what we let Logan know about. You know, we like to think, like Mike Bracewell and I like to think that, oh, we probably would have caught those as well. Made them look a bit easier, maybe. He got away to ESPN catch of the week or plays of the week, I think, Logan. I was actually right behind him. If you watch that catch, I'm the one who's right behind him at the time. There was a split second where I was like, I think I'm going to have to put a dive in there. And then he came and he stole the limelight.
Now, you've also been a substitute fielder for the Black Caps on several occasions, including Brendan McCullum's triple century, his 100 off 54 balls. You guys have got quite a special bond as a result of the time that you spent in the environment together.
That was a really cool part of my cricketing journey. I was not even contracted at the time. I wasn't even a professional cricketer. I had just got myself, like I said earlier, I got myself in front of coaches' eyes, and fielding really became a big part of my journey through cricket. Before all that happened, I actually ended up traveling with the Firebirds basically as a specialist fielder for a whole Ford Trophy campaign where the Firebirds won it. And that was Jamie Siddons at the time. He was like, I'm going to take Pete Younghusband on tour with us everywhere we go. And anytime anyone ever came off for a drink, I was the first on. That was quite literally my job. And then yeah, when the Black Caps are in town, my name was first top of the list to be sort of that substitute fielder. And a substitute fielder eventually became a specialist fielder as I went down. I ended up touring with the Black Caps as well. I went around the country. I did test matches in Auckland, test matches in Christchurch, one days and 2020s around the country as well. That was my introduction to top level cricket. And like you say, I felt like I was a bit of a lucky charm with Brendan. Everywhere I went with him, he seemed to get runs because I was at his double hundred up in Auckland before he got his triple. I was there as well. Brendan can thank me for that.
You are his lucky charm. You've caught Virat Kohli out and Umar Akmal. Is coming on for someone, do you feel a little bit of pressure, or were you just so chilled that it was no problem?
No way. There was not any chill. My heart was racing. I remember that one day where I caught Kohli So I was there on the sidelines. I can't remember who, it might have been Saudi was on the sidelines as well. And he actually had a little bit of a niggle. So Mike Hessen came up to me. I think Jesse Ryder got hit on the thigh, missed his thigh pad, bit of a hematoma. He couldn't really run. And Hess came up to me and he's like, mate, we're going to have to get you to do the whole 50. And I was just like, anxiety rush, you know, like, oh my word, the whole 50. First few overs, I was packing it and things started, you know, you realize it's just another ball coming towards you. And yeah, I sort of really settled in. I caught Coley and life was incredible. Every time I touched the ball, the whole stadium erupted because no one knew who I was. I was this person with no name on my back. And funny enough, it was my biggest grounding, I think, as a cricketer, because it got to about the 49th over. I'd fielded 50. I'd fielded amazingly. I'd stopped runs. I'd caught Coley. And I was like, oh, life is good right now. And then a sky went up. Matt Henry was on a 4-for or 3-for at the time. And sky went up and I spilt
oh,
it.
Oh, no way.
I dropped it. So in the same game, I actually dropped the catch as well. Talk about a real leveler. But yeah, I guess that was my first big lesson about complacency. And it was on the world stage.
Was it the lights? Because a lot of people don't realise those lights are so bright for the television cameras. It can be very difficult.
I mean, I'm not trying to make excuses, but it was my first time fielding under lights. Yeah, like you say, people don't realise. The problem about fielding under lights is because these light towers everywhere, there's no shadow on the ball. So the ball is basically a solid dot or a white in this example. So you can't tell if the ball's spinning or anything like that because it's just so lit up. And often when you get those big high catches, the ball's spinning, it's not going to come vertically down. You know, it's going to drift a little bit, sway in the wind. So that particular catch, mate, I've seen the replay many a time now. And it missed my hands by about a foot. I'd like to think I was good enough to catch it, you know, 99 times out of 100. But, you know, I misjudged it completely. It completely missed my hands.
You've had some real success with the Firebirds. You debuted in 2015. You've won the Plunkett Shield in that time, the Ford Trophy, and on multiple occasions, the Super Smash. So what makes Wellington so strong?
We've really developed our culture here in Wellington in recent years. I think it's no secret that a few years ago it was a tough changing room. I think in the cricket fraternity, everyone really knows that there was some, you know, tough to break into the setup, and it really took a few players coming in from the outside and like the likes of Hamish Marshall and stuff, and they changed the way the room felt a lot, and since then it's just kept growing like that. Hamish Bennett came along as well, and he added a lot to that, and our signings outside of the region have actually also been really, really good. And then you mix that with some really good local talent that was coming through, and it was just a great recipe in the end. Yeah, our success has been incredible in the last few years. We've won all the competitions, some of them multiple times. It's been a really cool journey, and I never thought I would have been a part of it when I first sort of started giving it a crack. But I look back now, and like you say, there's 6 or 7 titles there. It's really been quite cool.
Any stories in and around your playing circles? We've had Heath Davis bowling a real pint of batters. We've had chance meetings with celebrities. We've had players naming their flat and getting tattoos of the flat's name on their foot. Anything you'd like to share?
I was trying to think of, do I have stories? I've got a terrible memory with cricket. Some people just remember every detail. And I've got a terrible memory. My games just sort of merge into nothing. But like, I guess, look, cricket's a funny old game. You know, the cricket family around the world is a lot smaller than you think. And like, I look at a few of my games and things I've done over the years, and you don't realize how quick things can change and who you meet that ends up becoming something. You know, like I remember I played a charity game in England in 2015, and I got Tim Payne out in that game. He was, at that time, his career was all but over. You know, he'd had a go with Australia. He hadn't done very well, I don't think, and he'd sort of dropped out of the system, and he was playing club cricket in England. And then 2 years later, he's captaining Australia, you know, after all the sandpaper gate and all that. And you kind of look back and you're like, what the heck? You're like, 2 years ago, I was playing this like village game of cricket with this guy. And now look at him, you know. And Yeah, cricket's a funny old game, and you just never know what's going to happen to a lot of players and where they'll end up and how good they actually are. Yeah, things happen really, really fast. So I guess you just got to, you know, be really open about who you meet and their own journey. And it's quite cool to, you know, follow these guys and stay friends.
What's been the proudest moment for you? And it doesn't have to be cricket.
Quite a lot's happened in recent years. It's been quite a cool journey in the last recent year. I got married. We've obviously had our little boy. Those are life moments, you know, that have been incredible. And they've actually, you know, to relate it to cricket, they've really helped my game. You know, there's a life outside of the sport, and you can come back from a game or a training and you can just sort of drop things and go cuddle your boy, or even go cuddle your dog and watch a movie with your wife and just really just settle down and have a good time off the park. Those life moments have been amazing for me mentally and I think even just helping my career.
Yeah, and what about any cricket moments?
I guess, I mean, we've touched on a few moments that were amazing as part of my journey, like those moments where I got to field for New Zealand, take some catches, be with McCullum on some of those incredible innings. But I think the proudest one for me was winning Wellington, the Fibres Bowl of the Year the season before this one. Just considering how long a journey it had been for me, I really toiled away. And then when I finally did crack it, I felt like I was stuck behind a great player in Jeetan Patel. And it just felt like I was never really going to get a good crack. And then to end up getting through that barrier and actually getting awarded the best bowler in the Firebirds was a really, really special moment for me.
Let's talk about your downtime. What do you like to do? Are you a golfer or tennis player or chill out?
I like to think I'm a avid golf fan and player. Since having my little boy, the golf games really seems to disappear, but my clubs still live in my spare bedroom, and I walk past and I get the putter out and I get the chipper out. And you know, I try play golf as much as I can. Golf's a big part of my life. And especially within the Firebirds group, there's a lot of good golfers. So I try to get out as much as I can. I love spending time with family. I've become a bit of a coffee connoisseur. Like, I think Wellington's brought that out of me, but a bit of chill time as well nowadays is really what life's about.
Now, when you say you love your coffee, you don't like just going for a cup of coffee somewhere. You're really, really invested in coffee, like next level. Is that fair to say?
I'm trying to be. I haven't quite got the... I've put a lot of work into my coffee. I've got the machine and I've got all the gadgets that go along with it. I was promised a wedding upgrade for my machine, but the wedding funds seem to disappear quite fast, so I didn't have the money there. But no, I've put a bit of research into my coffee, and I've learned to love it. You know, I've learned all about the grinds and the tamping and the different shots and the times and the weights and all that. So I am a bit of a coffee fiend, yeah.
So if I came past home, asked you for a latte, you're the guy that does a little picture of the flower and all that? Can you do all that stuff?
Yes. I've got the latte out down. Yeah, I've got that down.
So what's coming up for you in the next wee while?
Obviously, big summer of cricket ahead. We're going to have quite a few new faces, I reckon, playing for Wellington. We're so fortunate in the players that have, you know, gone to the next level, and the likes of Finn Allen and Mike Brasel and Rutchins banging on that door as well. And Searsy is now in the mix. So a lot of cricket, a lot of opportunity to play, which is exciting. Just try get myself in the best position for that and in the right frame of mind, and hopefully hit the ground running as soon as that season starts. And then, I'll keep ticking away with this piranha, and hopefully it just keeps growing as it is. And I mean, I've set a bit of a goal for myself that come April next year, I could actually potentially get as close to doing it full time. Yeah, that's my goal.
Oh, best of luck with that, Peter. Peter Younghusband, thank you so much for coming on Through the Pickets. Best of luck to you and Harriet with Luca and all the little milestones that you mentioned coming up, building that Piranha sock brand. I'm looking forward to this football announcement. I'm really looking forward to it. And, of course, the upcoming summer with the Firebirds.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sis. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Through the Pickets is an NZCPA production. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and our members, make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our website, nzcpa.co.nz. If you liked our podcast, please do take a minute to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. I'm Dennis Katsanos, and you've been listening to Through the Pickets.